Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Detroit and was signed as a catcher by the Philadelphia Phillies at age 18. He played 12 seasons and played for the Philadelphia Phillies, Chicago White Sox, Oakland A's, Seattle Mariners, and the Cleveland Indians. He then became a coach for the Chicago Cubs, and in 1991 he became the Cubs manager after Don Zimmer was fired. The first ever manager in baseball of Armenian heritage, his name, Jim Essien. And we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Jim Essien, who played for the Cleveland Indians and then managed the Chicago Cubs. So, Jim, first off, that World Series had to be unbelievable for you.
Jack, delighted to be with you. I was at Game 6 in Cleveland. That's all my schedule would allow was Game 6. I would have loved to have been at Wrigley Field for the middle three games. Great series, great managers, great players. Hard to top. I've been to many World Series live, and this was hard to top.
All right, your childhood, you were one of 13 kids. Your dad was a house painter. What was it like growing up with 13?
It was crowded. It was crowded, and it was you better get your dinner while it was still available. But we grew up in a melting pot neighborhood on the east side of Detroit, Jefferson Chalmers area. Wonderful place to grow up. Lots of children, lots of kids. Wonderful St. Martin's Parish there for us in the just between Chalmers and Connor, south of Jefferson, down by the river. I had plenty of brothers. I've got seven brothers and five sisters, plenty of guys and gals to play ball with and play with, lots of kids in the neighborhood, lots of playgrounds, had a ball.
What's the biggest thing, Jim, you learned from Mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
My mother was just so passionate. She was just so, had such empathy and sympathy and love for people. So she had that tender side. My father happened to be a pretty good athlete himself. He was a star in the Detroit softball, men's fast pitch softball leagues back in the day after the war. Briggs Beauty Ware, he was a star pitcher. I think some of your older listeners would remember those old softball teams and the pleasure they got from the competition in those leagues. And he taught me how to work, and he taught me how to play ball.
Speaking of playing ball, you're 18 years old. You get several offers for football scholarships, U of M, MSU, Alabama, Texas, Notre Dame. And instead, in August of 69, you sign with the Phillies as an undrafted free agent catcher. Why?
You know, Jack, I was recruited to play football. Everybody thought I was a pretty good football player. I took visits to Michigan. That was Bo Schembechler's first year in 69. I had an offer from Michigan. I visited Notre Dame. That was Eric Parseghian. I visited Michigan State. That was Duffy Doherty. And down in Miami, Florida, I got invited and took a trip down there. So I could have went anywhere. I chose Michigan. I was not drafted in baseball, Jack, so after I graduated from high school, I had a full scholarship to Michigan for football, but that summer played on the best Sandlot team in the city, A&B Brokers, turned out to be the best in the country. We won the national championship. It drew a lot of scouts. Tony Lucadello of the Phillies found me at Northwestern Field and invited me to Old Connie Mack Stadium for a tryout. And they flew me in there, and I worked out, and then I had lunch, and they flew me back. And Tony Lucadello was waiting for a contract offer for me. I took it because in football, you played back then, you played 8 or 9 or 10 games, but you practiced every day. in baseball, all you do is play games every day.
Speaking of which, what was it like, the life of a minor league baseball player back in the mid-70s?
Well, it was two guys to a nail in the locker room. We played on field, not like today's stadiums, and we played on fields that were bumpy and lumpy and had a lot of bad bounces in them. And they were old rickety wooden bleacher-type ballparks. Not like today. They got the beautiful minor league stadiums. It's quite a big business now, and they've really made it easier on the players from a comfort level. Salary-wise, oddly enough, and this is kind of strange, Jack, but today's minor league players don't make any more money than we made back in the early 70s.
All right. You're 22 years old, September 15th, 1973. You get to the show. You get to the major leagues with the Phillies. Talk about that first game in the majors.
Well, it was great. Actually, I just pinch hit. I got called up from Reading, Pennsylvania, their double-A team in the Eastern League. We had won the Eastern League championship. I got called up probably around September the 10th or so. Finally got a pinch hit appearance or two. Matter of fact, my first at-bat was up in Montreal. My mother and father were there, saw me ground out. Boy, what a great thrill to be there as a 22-year-old. I was the only player called up that year from the minors. The Phillies were building a powerhouse at that time with a great scouting system, great minor league system. And Mike Schmidt was there, and Bob Boone, and Greg Luzinski, and players like that. And what a great thrill to be around those guys, and great thrill. Your first stint in the major leagues, always a wonderful experience.
We're talking to Jim Essien. When we come back, we'll ask him about his 12-year major league career. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and with Jim Essien, who played 12 seasons in the major leagues for the Phillies, White Sox, Athletics, Mariners, and in the Indians. Jim, how would you describe your 12-year career in the bigs?
Jack, what a thrill. My family was just also thrilled for me. 10 years I played in the American League. I got to come into old Tiger Stadium a couple of times a year and play against the Tigers. Family was always there. Used to leave a lot of passes. Boy, I used to leave 60 or 70 passes for family and friends. It was a great thrill for me. I was able to make some money and get married and build a house and raise a family. It was just a great, it's everything you dreamed about as a kid growing up on the east side of Detroit. And I was just fortunate that I wasn't, born in Portugal in 1672.
Who was the best you ever played with?
Jack, I played with Michael Jack Schmidt in Philadelphia. Between him and I, we have over 500 major league home runs. He's a great player, great Hall of Famer. Everybody just appreciated the way he played the game. He's a great fielder as well. So I would say Mike Schmidt is certainly one of them. I had the pleasure of playing with some other Hall of Famers, Gaylord Perry and Steve Carlton and so many great players. Joe Morgan I played with, another Hall of Famer. But I would say that Mike certainly was an influence on me, a friend of mine, and kind of taught me the ropes as a young major leaguer.
You played catcher. Talk to us about the job catchers do and handling pitchers and also calling every pitch.
Jack, that's a good question. Catchers are so busy and so involved. It's probably why they go on to be coaches and managers, successful coaches and managers. There's so many of them. The they're just so involved with the manager and his decisions. The manager always comes to the catcher for information. The pitching coach is always coming to the catcher for information. The catcher's always working very intimately with the pitching staff, trying to get the best out of what they have that day. It's a very rugged position. I liked it because you got the ball all the time. I liked being involved in that action, and so it was just a great. I could play other positions, Jack. I played a little bit of first and third and outfield in the big leagues, but primarily I was a catcher. But that's the position. As far as calling the pitches, you know, you're working hard with the pitcher. Sometimes they got three or four different pitches you can use that day. Other times you're stuck with just a couple, and you're trying to get back to another one. So you're just working with the pitcher, doing the best you can to get those hitters out.
Don't shoot the messenger here, Jim. But most southpaws that I've met have a couple screws loose in the head. Why is that?
You know, they're throwing from the wrong side there. They're just their brain is not working like us normal right-handed people. I don't know. They've historically been maybe fairly or unfairly named as sort of flaky. But it can be true. I mean, you can find them out there. Those left-handers, you have to reel them in sometimes.
1985. You get into managing. How did that come to be?
You know, in 1985, I was 34 years old. I had coming off a pretty good year with Oakland, the Oakland A's in 84, and I got released in spring training in 1985, a young catcher by the name of Mickey Tettleton, who played for the Tigers a little bit. He was ready to play. He was a younger guy. I was an older veteran, maybe making a little too much money to only get 160-170 at bats. So they let me go, and I couldn't. I felt like I was a good player. I went to an independent team in Miami, Florida, just to stay in shape and to. I thought maybe if some of the big league catchers got hurt, they'd give me a call. So I went there to play. And I literally was playing one day and managing the next as my roommate Eddie Farmer, who broadcasts now for the White Sox on the radio, he came in and he said, "Hey, you want to manage this team?" I said, "What's up?" He said, "The general manager wants to fire the manager. He wants you to take over." So I took over as a player manager and just played one more game, got three hits, retired as a player because managing was so much fun. So that was 1985. At the end of the year, the Chicago Cubs called and requested my contract to manage in their farm system.
If that was the Eddie Farmer from St. Rita's on the south side of Chicago, I played against him. He had a whole bunch of screws loose in the head, that Eddie Farmer.
And he's right-handed, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
Eddie's a funny man and still making people laugh.
We used to sing Old MacDonald Had a Farm every time he pitched, and he'd just throw at us one after another. So, okay, what do all great managers have in common, Jim Essien?
You know, I would say that certainly they have in common the knowledge of the game that's been acquired over a long period of time at various levels of competition. In other words, I managed 2 years in A ball, 3 years in Double A. 2 years in AAA, I managed in Puerto Rico, I managed in Europe, I managed independent teams, I managed in the big leagues. So you have to have that knowledge, you have to have the knowledge of the game, the ability to manage people, get the best out of them, get along with everybody, manage umpires. You have to handle that part of the game as well. And, of course, major league managers, to a large degree, they would tell you that managing the press and the media and the demands are very difficult and time-consuming, and they usually can't wait for the game to get started. You have to manage the media as well.
Some would say the only place you haven't managed is in your own home.
Well, I managed to raise three kids, three great kids, and I've got six grandchildren now, and I just celebrated my 40th wedding anniversary with my lovely wife. And so you got to manage things at home first before you reach out and go on the road and do some other things. So that's been my goal is to make sure that there's domestic tranquility before I go out and try to manage a ball club.
Who's the best manager you ever saw, Jim?
You know, Billy Martin, I played for in 1980. There's been many of them, Jack, and I do usually single out Billy Martin because once that game started, he managed that game to win. He was very competitive. He would put a lot of pressure on the other team defensively. He came to win. He played hard, and he just instilled in all of us a desire, a confidence, and a desire to compete at a higher level. So I really appreciate what I learned from Billy. And usually I single him out. I played for other great managers as well, Pat Corrales, Bobby Winkles, Bob Lemon, Tony La Russa, played for those guys, many others, Rene Latchman, many others. But usually I single out Billy, and I'm kind of surprised he's not in the Hall of Fame yet.
If a young manager came to you and said, Jim Essien, what one or two pieces of advice would you give me regarding management, managing? What would you say?
Yeah, one would be just to be organized. Be organized. Another would be expect the unexpected, whether it's rosters or injuries or even during the game. You know, I was at Game 6 in the World Series, and they had Chapman out there in the eighth inning, 7-2 lead. Suddenly, with two outs in the top of the ninth, it suddenly became a 9-2 ball game. I think Rizzo hit a home run to make it 9-2. Now you don't need Chapman, but you don't have anybody up in the bullpen ready to come in. So Chapman had to come in and pitch to one batter in the ninth. He walked him. By that time, the pitcher in the bullpen was ready to come in. So anticipate the unexpected. In terms of managing people, be yourself. Just the management of people is important. There's so many things that happen, Jack.
The term skip or skipper for managers, where'd that ever come from?
I don't know. He's heading the ship. He's riding the ship. He's raising the sails. I don't know, but they do call me Skip. You know, I appreciate that moniker. But yeah, I don't know, Jack. Probably the guy that's captaining the boat.
Very few superstars have ever become great managers. Jim Essien, why?
You know, I had Jim Bunning, the great Jim Bunning, who pitched, of course, for the Tigers in the American League, and I believe the Mets in the National League. I think he may be the only pitcher to pitch a no-hitter in both leagues. Went on to be, of course, the great congressman or senator from Kentucky. Jim was probably too demanding, probably had achieved so much success that he expected everyone else to achieve that type of success the same way he did, perhaps. Perhaps impatience, perhaps not going through hard times and suffering so that you can empathize with the rest of us. So I would think that maybe... Pete Rose was a good manager in his day, but not too many go on. Not too many superstars go on to be managers. I think they may just not have the patience for it.
We're talking to Jim Essien. When we come back, we're going to talk about the world champion Chicago Cubs. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible. News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Jim Essien, who became the manager of the Chicago Cubs in 1991. Jim, that was May 21st, 1991. You were down at the Cubs' AAA Iowa team. What happened?
You know, Jack, I had managed for the Cubs 86 in the Carolina League, 87-8 in the Eastern League, 89 in the Southern League, 1990 in the American Association in Des Moines, started the 1991 season going back to Des Moines to manage again. During those years with the Cubs, we had a lot of success with our development of the minor league players. My teams won championships during that time. I began to gain some respect in the organization. In 1991, on May the 22nd, they fired Don Zimmer, who I liked very much and worked with in the past. But he had a beef. I think he had a beef with the president of the club that got out into the papers. It was embarrassing. The club was not off to a great start, despite signing several free agents, the high-priced free agents that year. So they called me in Des Moines and said, Jim, take the next plane out to New York City. You're going to meet with General Manager Jim Frey and President Don Grinesco the next morning, and they offered me a 2-year contract to manage the Cubs. So obviously I took it. It was a great thrill. I called my wife, I called my best friends, and told them what was going on, and they were praying for me and thinking about me. And so I took that job. We won that game in New York that night against the Mets. And then we won the next 4 games back in Chicago. So I won the first 5 games. Great thrill. Lost the next 3, won the next 3 after that. So I was sitting 8-3, and things were very, very exciting for me. Unfortunately, we went out to California and dropped 10 in a row.
I believe in that clubhouse you had Andre Dawson, Ryan Sandberg, Greg Maddux. Those are 3 Hall of Famers.
I did. I don't know how I screwed it up so badly, and it took the Cubs a long time to recover, Jack.
So, speaking of great ones, Mr. Cub, Ernie Banks. Tell us about Ernie Banks.
You know, I met Ernie on several occasions, just always upbeat. Just stood so tall and stately, and was very gracious and kind. He was very, very nice and highly accomplished Hall of Famer. And Mr. Cub, beautiful man. I loved him.
Okay, another bigger-than-life guy, Harry Carey. Cubs win, Harry Carey. Tell us about Harry Carey.
Well, I knew Harry from my days. I played 4 years for the Chicago White Sox, and Harry and Jimmy Pearsall were the announcers for that ball club in Chicago for the White Sox. I don't know if a lot of people know that. Then he moved over to the Cubs. Harry was very colorful, obviously, very, very controversial at times. He could be heartless as an interviewer. I remember my ball club in Chicago with the Cubs was going through a very difficult time, and a pregame interview with Harry started with, "Hey, Jim, is your team lackadaisical, or do they just look that way?" So the tough question to try to answer. Harry was wonderful. The singing of the seventh inning stretch and take me out to the ball game. The fans absolutely adored him. He was the face. He was the face of the Cubs, not necessarily Maddux or Dawson, you know, or Sandberg.
The Cubs are leading 4-3.
Harry Carey, take me out to the ballgame. Jim, you heard that thousands of times in your life. What did you do or think when you heard that song over and over?
Well, I sing it to this day. You know, last year I coached in the new United Shore Professional Baseball League at the new stadium in Utica, Michigan. I was a coach for the East Side Diamond Hoppers. And when they play that Take Me Out to the Ball Game, I sing it. I love it. I sing it. And so I sing it with glee. And it's the national anthem I don't like. Every time they played that, I had a bad game, Jack.
Theo Epstein, he came to the – first he built the Red Sox into winners. Then he came to the Cubs. Talk about this job Theo Epstein has done with the Chicago Cubs.
Well, remarkable. Remarkable job. You know, I'm rereading Moneyball, the book. I'm sorry, I forget the author's name.
Billy Beane, I think, right?
Well, Billy didn't write it, but it was a lot of it was about Billy Beane, the general manager of the Oakland A's. And Epstein's mentioned in that as well. And I really appreciate the new trends in baseball that use metric systems and statistics in a new and exciting way to manage very complicated and very the job he has is very complicated and it's very important. He's got a very important job and he's a very smart man. He's done a great job, and here he wins the World Series with the Boston Red Sox after they hadn't won it for so long. And then it didn't take them long to put together a team in Chicago that not only this year but looks to be for the near future is going to be right up there contending every year. Just a remarkable job. And I don't think that Mr. Epstein ever played professional baseball. He sure is a baseball expert.
Okay, we're talking about a new way. You mentioned a new way. Back in 1950, this is Robin Roberts, the number of complete games per year. 21, 22, 30, 32, 29, 26, 22. That's from 50 to 56. Now, Jim, if a guy gives us five or six innings, we're paying him $20 million. The game has become a game of relievers so much. Why is that?
You know, it must be the money, Jack. The money that when the starting pitchers that pile up those types of innings, you know, 200-plus innings or 180, 200, 220, 230 innings, boy, they're going to make a lot of money. Perhaps by keeping them, and if you're paying them a lot of money, you want to protect the arm. If they get up to those types of numbers, you're going to have to pay them a lot of money. So that may be a reason. You know, I mentioned Billy Martin in 1980 for the Oakland A's. They set records that won't be that today's baseball doesn't even come close to. Rick Langford had, Jack, I'm not sure, but 26 or 27 complete games on that staff. Steve McCaddy and Matt Keogh and Mike Norris also had 20-plus complete games on that staff. So four of the five pitchers that were starters on that staff had more than 18, 20, 25 complete games. It's a new age. Could be the money, could be the medical issues that dictate the number of pitches that you're going to allow a pitcher to pitch.
We're talking to Jim Essien, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Jim Essien, who was the first ever manager in baseball of Armenian heritage. And this past season, as he mentioned, he was a bench coach for the Diamond Hoppers, a minor league team in Utica, Michigan, that played the United Shore League. What did that teach you this past year, Jim?
Jack, what a great thrill to be back on the field again. I hadn't been on the field since 2013. I managed a team down in Fort Worth, Texas, which was an independent team as well. Prior to that, we've got to go all the way back to 1996 when I was on the field as a double-A manager for the New York Yankees. But being in Utica, I was just a great experience, so much fun. The kids just loved it. There were a lot of young little leaguers and young Legion kids, the ball players that came out, guys and gals, and they would hang by the dugout because it's very intimate and they could get down close to the dugout. And I really enjoyed them coming down, and I allowed them to come in. They're just too much fun, and just a great situation, a wonderful atmosphere, wonderful family atmosphere at that ballpark.
When we talked, you know, these kids were had just graduated college, most of them, and you said, Jack, they're living the dream. Talk about them living the dream.
Yeah, the players themselves living the dream is certainly, you know, I had two sons that played. One, my older son played 8 years in the minor leagues, trying, you know, living the dream, trying to make it to the majors. I had a younger son, Daniel, that played 4 years in college as a starting catcher. These players that we signed, Jack, they're living the dream. The dream is, I want to play baseball. I want to play it for a living. I want to play as much of it as I can. I want it to be my career. And they're just so hungry. They're wonderful. They work so hard. And you have to go for it. You have to go for it. Not a lot of them make it, as you know, Jack. But these kids are living the dream of playing baseball, playing it as much as they can every day, and having success in it.
How tough is it to make the bigs?
Well, the numbers indicate that it's very difficult. You know, very few make it. Those that make it, very few stay around for a long period, any period of time or a long period of time.
So
it's very difficult. You have to learn to live the lifestyle, Jack. It's a lot of road trips, a lot of buses, a lot of trains, a lot of planes, and a lot of restaurants, and a lot of temptations out there. So you have to learn to live the lifestyle. Go out there, work hard, hone your craft. Learn how to get along with people, and even then, it's just very difficult to make it, and it's very unique when you do.
Speaking of living the dream, when you were the manager of the Cubs in 91, your 11-year-old son, Jim, was one of your bat boys with the Cubs. What was that like, Dad?
Oh, a lot of fun, Jack. He was, he was bat boy wherever I was when I was managing in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, or Pittsfield, Massachusetts, or Des Moines, Iowa. Spring training, he was always the bat boy, and it was fun. It was great having the kids, Janie and the kids, with me everywhere we went. It was difficult for her packing them up and moving them all the time, but we always kept the kids with us. My son Jim and my daughter Samantha grew up in baseball. My son Daniel came along years later and sort of missed out on all the fun we were having back then. But we're a baseball family. We love it. I took my son Daniel to the Game 6 of the World Series in Cleveland. We had a ball. We're a baseball family, very sports-oriented, and I think that sports and athletics really teaches you some life skills.
You've been around young men your whole life. What do young men really want deep down?
What do they want, what, Jack? I'm sorry.
You've been around young men your whole life. Deep down, what do young men really, really want and need?
You know, they want to be loved, and they want to do whatever they want to do, just like the rest of us. But they also, they want to grow up. They want to grow up. They want to be men. They want to have success. They want to get out in the world and see the world. They want to, most of them want to meet pretty girls, Jack. They want to meet a lot of pretty girls.
If you can hit 3 out of 10 times you're at the plate, get a hit, you're in the Baseball Hall of Fame. So you have a lot of failure. Talk to us, Jim, about the fear of failure and how it paralyzes so many people.
Yeah, that's a great thought, and that's a great question. Is what do you do when you fail? And that's another big part of being having success is dealing with your failures. And had a lot of failures in the game. Learned by them, lived through them, got through them. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. One of the things when you're a ball player is how do you handle, you know, slumps, and how do you handle disappointments? And it's got to make you stronger, Jack. And you just got to be patient. You got to be grown up about it. Life just doesn't, you know, isn't just a bowl of cherries. You're going to get some pits in there as well. And just patience and maturity and going through suffering.
If there's a mom or dad out there tonight who has a son or daughter that loves sports and wants to be an athlete, what would you say to that mom and dad?
Well, I would say, you know, get the kids involved. You're going to find out, some of the parents find out that their kids are very talented. Some of the parents, unfortunately, live vicariously through their children and become too involved, and it becomes too competitive, and they become too critical. I would say let the kids be kids. Let them play. Encourage them. Don't coach them. Let the coaches coach them. But get them out in the backyard and toss them a ball and toss them that wiffle ball and let them swing the bat and play catch with them and shoot hoops with them and be involved with them in that way. But don't be so involved. And, hey, no criticism of the coaches at the dinner table.
If there's a young person tonight dreaming of becoming a coach, young boy or girl, what would you say to that young person?
You know, that's a great thing to become, is somebody that would take the time at the amateur level or the professional level, take the time at the amateur level to work with the kids. We did not criticize the high school coaches and the Sandlot coaches and the AAU coaches. We never criticized them at the dinner table. We wouldn't let the kids, you know, we would certainly let the kids vent a little bit, but no criticisms. I would tell somebody that wants to be a coach to just ask a lot of questions, be involved, do all the little things that you can do to help and work your way up, and somebody will find you.
As our time wanes down this evening, Jim, what advice would you give to our young listeners out there?
You know, I would say, look, your parents love you. Love them back. Be obedient to your parents. Honor your parents. Honor your father and your mother. Do well in school. Very important. Very few go on to have college or professional careers, so your education is going to be very, very important. Enjoy your teammates. Be respectful to your coaches. Make it to practice on time.
Jim Essien, for decades, you played ball, then you managed. You were a servant leader. You continue to be. Keep up the great, great work. You're a great American.
Jack, thank you very much.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.